Hello, my legendary friends. This is Legends and Losers, the show for those who want to create a legendary life and a legendary business, hosted by Christopher Lockhead, a legend in marketing, pioneer in category design, and co-author of Play Bigger, who can recite much of The Big Lebowski, but can't remember his wife's phone number, with Colin Vincent, born with a camera in his hand, snowboard on his feet, and co-founder of Equity Directory. And now, strap yourselves in, it's time for Legends and Losers.
All right, all right, all right. Hey ho, let's go. Welcome to another episode of Legends and Losers Unlocked. These are short episodes where we try to unlock, unpack, unhinge, uncock, undo, redo a particular topic, a news item that's going on, or a business concept, or what have you. And so what we want to talk about today is advice for the new or newly hired CMO. It's a question that I get a lot, either from people who are entering their first CMO job, or from CMOs who are taking on a new role. They often call or email or just over beers or whatever, say, hey, you know, I'm starting this new job. What do you think I should be thinking about? And so I wrote a blog post a while ago about it, and it seemed to get a lot of traction and drive another set of questions. And so I thought it would be a cool thing to unlock. All right. So off the top, the first thing I think anybody who's a CMO or an aspiring CMO needs to know is that most of the HR data that's out there says that CMO tenure is about 44 months, which is not great, but maybe not terrible. My suspicion, if you are in tech in Silicon Valley, look, I don't know. I don't have any data on this. If you do, by all means, fire it off to blackhole@legendsandlosers.com. I'd love to see it. What the tenure of a tech CMO is, my suspicion is it's around 2 years, but I don't think it's four. Anyway, regardless, CMOs are one of the most fired executives. So I think we need to know that going in. And I also think understanding why, you know, why is it that A, CMOs get fired so much, and B, I think, at least in my experience as a CMO, we're the executive that gets the most help from other executives and people in the company. I'll get to that in a second. But I think we get fired because we do stuff that, you know, sometimes is not connected to producing the kind of business outcomes that are obvious. And so I think that's one of them. I think that's a polite way of me saying, I think some CMOs are not as connected to quote unquote the business as they should be. And so an antidote to that is, at least in my experience, is to be in the field. So when I was a CMO, I traveled 300,000 to 400,000 miles a year. And, you know, I was in the field, maybe not 50% of the time, but, you know, close. 40% for sure. And I went on sales calls and I went to analyst meetings and I did press meetings and all that stuff, but I went on a lot of sales calls. And my goal as a CMO was to become the most requested executive in the company on a sales call. And of course, that's a hard thing to do as a CMO because, you know, you're not the CEO. And of course, you're not running sales and you're not the head of engineering. And so the sales organization normally goes to those places, at least in tech companies. And so to me, it was a really giant BHAG, big, hairy, audacious goal to be the most requested executive at a sales call, whether it was a corporate visit or out in the field. And so what that meant was I was able to be in touch with reality. That is to say, what our salespeople were going through and what it took to close multi-million dollar deals. And so I sort of tasked myself with becoming a sales rep in that context. To do a similar thing on the engineering side, what I was able to do was swap jobs, and we tried to do it twice a year with the head of engineering. So my last company where I was a CMO called Mercury Interactive, the engineering headquarters was in just outside of Tel Aviv, Israel, and the headquarters for the rest of the business, so to speak, was in Silicon Valley. And so the head of engineering and I would swap jobs. And so he would come to California and run marketing, and I would fly to Israel and run engineering. And then he and I would compare notes on what we learned and thoughts and ideas for each other. And so the reason that became important was, I think he and I wanted to do it. His name was Boaz Halamish, and he's an amazing guy. You know, we wanted to understand each other's part of the business so that we could be better executives and leaders and work better together. And I think that was our primary goal, and to get to know each other's teams. What certainly I didn't understand was the beyond that, and it was all that and more. And one of my favorite things to do is to jam with engineering teams on what we should do with products. But the symbolism of it became incredibly powerful, because it let the whole company know that marketing and engineering were together. And as you probably know, in most companies, marketing is hated more than by engineering, by sales, if I said that right. Anyway, engineering and sales hate marketing generally. And so I tried to help fix those two problems by being in the field, being close to the salespeople, as well as being close to the head of engineering and the engineers and the engineering leaders. So I think that that really makes a big difference in getting close to the business. The other mistake I think that particularly new CMOs make is they fall into the rebranding trap. For some fucking reason, we think the first thing we should do when we get a new job is change the logo, or have some asinine discussion about like which hue of blue we should enter into the color palette or some other. And so there's this art part of marketing that for whatever reason, new CMOs want to fuck with. It's like a dog that wants to pee, you know, in their new area. And leave this one alone. And I would ask you to leave it alone for a couple of reasons. Number one, it's going to take you out of getting into the business very quickly. You don't know what you want to rebrand the company, or really if you need to rebrand the company, until you get into it most often. Number two, there's a symbolic component to this. Get into the business. Earn your stripes. Just because you're the CMO doesn't really mean shit. Get in and show people you're going to get focused on business outcomes that matter. So with that said, and by the way, a rebrand can matter a lot. I'm not shitting on branding, very far from it. But I am shitting on a CMO who comes in and the first quarter or two embarks on a multi-million dollar or more rebrand just because, you know, you want it to be your logo. And even if the company needs a rebrand, hold off on it is what I'm telling you. And the third thing I'm telling you is a rebrand in the absence of a category strategy is lighting money on fire. And I'll get to that in a second. So what should the new CMO really do to make a difference beyond the things I've already mentioned? In the first 90 days, my advice is to set up three teams to tackle two tactical areas and one strategic area. So the first tactical area is find three things that can increase revenue now. And they could be, you know, relatively simple, but you could put a legendary set of growth hackers into the company or working with the company to drive a set of digital conversion metrics, whatever they might be for your business. One that is almost always easy to ramp up and one that makes people very happy is lead gen. Well, fuck, give them lead gen. Sales or marketing or CMOs, VPs of marketing get fired a ton for we don't have enough leads. We want the Glengarry leads. Choke the fucking sales force with leads. Give them leads. Not shitty ones. Go solve this problem. Hire an appointment setting company. Get this done. This is not rocket surgery. Give the sales force what they need on the leads. Website performance, social media marketing, simple things like, you know, give the Salesforce a killer new demo or corporate deck presentation. Work with the product teams. There may be a very cool pricing bundling move that you could make that would drive some revenue increases. We did this thing at Mercury, actually an initiative led by a dear friend of mine, one of the smartest people I ever worked with, and one of the two most effective people I ever met, Sue Barsamian. She did this thing called white space analysis. She led this team. And what white space analysis was for us was look at all of our customers, look at what products they have, and therefore we now know what products they don't have, and then go figure out a strategy to create demand inside the customer base for the products they don't have, i.e. the white space. A lot of companies don't do it. It sounds simple, but that's a great way to increase revenue quickly. Sales training is another example, and there's many others. What I'm telling you is, in almost every company, there is low-hanging fruit that will make a pop in revenue and improvement in revenue quickly. As the CMO, that's your job. You know, as a senior executive in the company, your job is driving revenue. CMO's job is driving revenue. I don't care if you don't, you know, have the sales organization or the channel or whatever reporting to us. We have to drive revenue. And I used to treat the quarterly number for the company it was my number, just the way I would if I was the VP of sales or CRO. Okay, so that's the first tactical team. The second tactical team is the cost team. Just like revenue, find three things that will decrease cost. Trade show budgets often get out of control, or you find yourself at too many dumb shows. You know, so you say, well, why are we going to such and such a show? And they're like, oh, we've always gone to such and such, or our competitors go, or whatever the fuck reason. And it's at least worth looking at. Of course, the advertising budget, what you might want to look at, what the mix of digital versus not digital. Of course, we all know how that's tipping. You might look at headcount. At a minimum, there are probably some people who are in the wrong places and might need to get moved. And listen, you're the new CMO. Now's the time to whack some people. So if there's dead wood, if there's you know, parts of the organization that you just think have too much in them, make the move now. You're in your honeymoon period. Get the headcount thing done. Look at PR. Of course, travel is always a place to go. So be smart. Decrease some revenue and make some tough decisions and be smart. And CEOs and CFOs love cost reductions, and CMOs, in my opinion, should too. All right. The third team is the strategic team, which is put together a team that is chaired by your CEO to go to work on a category design strategy. We want to know how we're taking control of the agenda in our space. Are we the ones defining the rules? Are we the one, most importantly, framing the problem? That is to say, the way customers and the category think about the problem that we solve. Are we evangelizing the problem and the category more than we're marketing our products and our features? Is there a new, more powerful way to frame the problem? If we tilted the problem in a slightly different way, would we be more advantaged? Do we have a powerful point of view that really stands out? You know, of course, Mark Benioff's No Software, probably the greatest point of view in modern enterprise history. You know, an example in the consumer space I love is Sarah Blakely, the founder of Spanx and category designer of shapewear. You know, she invents this stuff. You know, I'm married to a woman, so I got a closet full of it. And she doesn't call it a girdle 2.0, and she doesn't call it underwear. She creates a new category of shapewear, and now she's a billionaire. Figure out how to deposition the competition. Is there a Frodo's exercise we should do? So in the book Play Bigger, we talk about getting very clear about looking at the existing category as it is today and declaring it the past. So therefore, those are the froms. And the way we want it to be are the twos. And we try to map them one-to-one. So if you write out all the attributes of how the category works right now, those become the froms. And the corollary, based on the quote-unquote solution that you're selling, become the twos. And then we begin to evangelize those things. So, for example, you know, in the beginning of cloud computing, moving from owning apps and running them in your data center to having them run, quote unquote, in the cloud and just plugging into them when you need them, et cetera, et cetera. And don't forget that legendary CMOs are category designers. Ultimately, our jobs as CMOs are to be the people who are at cause in the matter of setting the agenda through a provocative, engaging point of view that conditions the market to think about a problem and a solution in exactly the way that we want. And if we do that, we are following in the footsteps of Henry Ford, Steve Jobs, and Sarah Blakely. And if we don't, we're probably getting into a product battle in a category that was designed by somebody else. And God knows, we do not want to do that. You know, so one of my favorite questions is, who would you rather be, Steve Jobs or Steve Ballmer? One guy created and designed categories, the other guy competed for market share. And we know how both those movies ended. So that's what I would ask you to think about as you're partnering with the CEO on the category design project. Don't fall into the trap of making category design marketing. So on initiative 3, the category design needs to be the CEO's. She is the chairman of the category design team, committee, whatever you want to call it. And you as the CMO, give her all the credit in the world for the category design. And the reason for it is, A, she's the leader of the company. And B, only the CEO can really truly drive a cross-functional initiative. You as the CMO can be a legendary leader. And I had success doing that as a CMO. But the reason I did was because I had an amazing CEO who partnered with me, Amnon Landon. And he was my partner. And to quote my friend Jay Larson, I was not confused about the org chart. So let the CEO be the CEO. Let the CEO take all the credit. Winning is about prosecuting the magic triangle. The CEO is the person who can drive that. And the CMO can be a legendary executive with the CEO getting that done. And so that's it. My advice to the new CMO, get focused on 3 things. Reduce cost. Increase revenue in the short term, get some quick wins on the board, and then strategically figure out how we are going to prosecute the magic triangle. That is to say, get company, category, and product right. Become the category king. Take 76% of the economics in the category and have a great time doing it. All right. That's it, my legendary friends. Thanks for tuning into this episode of Legends and Losers, and we'll see you again soon.